Hello there, and welcome to Talking Flutes Extra. My name is Jean-Paul Wright. This week, I'm dialing into one of my favourite social media flute players. However, before I do so, I'd like to mention an interesting debate I've had online recently regarding the preferred terminology of a flute player. Yeah, I know. Important things, eh? It has arisen solely because of the new website called The Happy Flutist, which I spoke about on a podcast a couple of weeks ago. And surprisingly, or not, depending on whichever side of the fence you're sitting on, it's opened up a passionate discussion on what flute players should be called, and indeed preferred to be called. Well, I'm a Brit, so I've always known myself as a flautist or flute player. However, in many countries around the world, especially in the USA, they call themselves a flutist. And so when I was looking for a name for the new website, I decided to go with the most prevalent term of flutist, not realizing that that word would surprisingly irritate some. So off I trotted online to find out why and when and what should I call myself. In Nancy Toff's Essential, The Flute Book, she explains that the term flautist is associated with the negative connotations derived from the Latin verb flaut, which means to jeer or mock, which apparently derives its meaning from the practice of playing a flute to ridicule. In my case, nothing's changed there. According to the Oxford English Dictionary, the term flautist did not appear in English until 1860, when Nathaniel Hawthorne used it in his publication The Marble Faun. "The flautist poured his breath in quick puffs of jollity," he wrote. The frequent use of the word flautist is probably inspired also by the Italian terminology flauto, which pervades musical scores. And significantly, Hawthorne had lived in Italy for a year and a half before he wrote The Marble Faun. The Oxford English Dictionary states that the word flutist, and gives a date of 1603, is much older and established word than flautist, and date given is 1860. Since the English term flute is related to the modern French flute, it follows, therefore, that the player of the instrument would be a flutist. So Nancy Toff pleads calling her a flute player, or even a fluter, a term coined by the great Samuel Pepys. His diary entry for June the 21st, 1666, notes, "I saw a picture of a fluter playing on his flute." So Nancy Toff pleads flutist, fluter, or flute player. Please, not flautist. Ultimately, though, if you are riled by being called a flutist or flautist, then I applaud you for not having more important worries to deal with. All I can say is don't sweat the small stuff. Let's all be friends. So, moving over to my console, I'm now going to dial in to Daniela Mars. She is a wonderful Brazilian flutist, flautist, flute player, let's not go into this argument again, raised in Japan, South Korea, Brazil and England. Really a nomadic flute player, I think. Daniela enjoys a rich musical life as a chamber musician and a soloist in France. And she has mastered her art of the flute playing, ilk, at the Guildhall School of Music and Drama in London, and also at City University and the Prager Conservatorium of Arts in Vienna. That's just a very brief overview of this lovely, lovely lady, and I'm just going to call her now. Here we go. I assume she's still in Kent, because I had afternoon tea with Daniela last Thursday, and she said she's going back to Kent. Oh, hello, Daniela, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
I assume you're still in lovely Kent.
Actually, I had to, my plans changed a bit last minute and I had to fly back to Paris. So I'm in my living room in Paris right now.
Oh, it's a hard life, isn't it?
So hard, yes.
No, I'll let our listeners into a little secret. You and I enjoyed afternoon tea in London last Thursday, last Wednesday, didn't we?
Yes, it was lovely, and we stayed there for a long time, actually.
We did. I mean, the idea was to do a podcast whilst we were having afternoon tea, but we just gassed and talked and gassed and talked and had a great time, didn't we? And I forgot.
Yes, and ate many cakes.
That is the afternoon tea. So, Daniela, how are you, my lady?
I'm good. I'm very good. I got back very late last night because the flights were delayed because of all the winds. I don't know if you saw how windy it was in London, but it was a bit crazy. But I'm good. I'm happy to be back.
Daniela, you're very big on social media, and but you're very big for different reasons, aren't you? Because of your love of the bass flute, love of contemporary performance, and really experimental flute playing and music, which incorporates videography, which incorporates sound and photography. In fact, you're a flute player very different from other flute players, aren't you?
I guess you could say that. Someone did tell me that recently, and in the beginning, I was a bit reluctant to agree, but it is true.
Where did you start, or where did the influence away from just performing in front of an audience come from? Because you do that anyway, you do that as a performer. But what made you suddenly start experimenting?
Well, I've always had quite a passion for photography and videos, and I am a bit of a nerd or geek, you can say. So I would love to learn more about or see these videos. Like, for example, there's a singer, Icelandic singer called Björk, and her videos always inspired me. They were very different, and especially with her album Biophilia. And then I always wanted to kind of make my own because whenever I would kind of listen to music, or even when I perform something, I always have an image in my head as if it was kind of like a music video, you know, like
Sure.
telling a story or something. So I would want to try and show that because even if the audience, you know, when the audience hears your music, it's not necessarily what you're seeing or what you're feeling necessarily. Like we all have our own history and background or of what we would influence how we perceive the music, I think. So, yeah, that's when it started. I just realized that I think I want to do it myself and try and make more videos.
You do. You'd actually like to tell a story. So the audience or the viewer is listening, but also watching. And that for me is it's an extra dimension to a performance.
Yes.
We know that you know this story. I first came across you on a YouTube video playing Zoom Tube.
Yeah.
That was a long time ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was 7 years ago, but I'm so surprised that you were the one who answered me for the video, and like only years later did I realize after even after knowing you that it was you. What, like I've been talking to you for years and I
It was just very creative, and
thank you.
it was a very different take on Zoom Tube, wasn't it? It was you were in your
Yeah.
ballet because you dance as well, don't you? And it was in your ballet outfit, and I was just transfixed in watching, and almost you. And then you brought the flute into your performance, and it was a really good juxtaposition of them both, and I just really thoroughly enjoyed it.
Thank you. Yeah, it was I was wearing a morph suit, and I didn't know because for those who haven't watched it, I'm basically dancing and playing the flute like at the same time, but I wasn't sure if I wanted to show that I was the dancer later, you know, because at one point when we have to shout "Yao," I take off the like the top of the morph suit so you can see that I'm the
Yes.
one who's dancing. But I was so nervous because I was thinking this probably looks so weird to many people. So I actually took a while to upload it. Like the video was ready, and all I had to do was press like click publish or upload or something. But yeah, it was a bit stressful for me at that time.
How did you
Yeah.
feel? Yeah.
Well, I mean, I had asked other people's opinion, and before I would ask, I don't know about seven people difference opinion. Like, I'd ask my mom, I'd ask my brother, I'd ask my best friends, and everyone said, "Oh, it's really cool. It's interesting. You should definitely share." But it was I was nervous because I don't know, I was dancing and I hadn't seen that before either. So I thought I might just look like a crazy person.
You can ask so many people and get so many different viewpoints. Ultimately, you have to go with your gut, don't you? And your gut told you to press that button.
Yes. And now I actually don't ask people's opinion. Much better. I just do it. Like, I don't ask at all. I force myself, and now it's really easy.
There's too many agendas out there anyway, isn't there?
Yeah.
Right, Daniela, you're nomadic. Let's take you back to baby Daniela.
Okay.
Right, where did you grow up?
I was born in Tokyo. So in Japan, mm-hmm. and I spent about 2 months there. After 2 months, so a little baby, I should ask my parents actually, because I obviously don't remember, but I think I went first to England and then I went to Brazil. And then when I was 2 years old, I lived in South Korea for 4 years. And in South Korea, I would study in a international school, like a British school, but I would speak to my parents in Portuguese, so I became a fully bilingual, and I stayed there for 4 years. And after that, I went to I believe it was England for just a tiny bit, then I went to Brazil, and then I went to England again, where I lived in York in the north, and I studied from year two to year five. I don't know what age is year five, I can't remember. But then after year five, I moved back to Brazil and I stayed there until I was 16 years old. And when I was 16 and people were starting to pick what they were going to study for university, I decided, well, I really want to do classical music. It's really something that because I started learning the flute in New York, I forgot to say that. But and it was always a huge passion of mine, but the pressure is huge actually when you're in this age in Brazil. And everyone was like, oh, you should do medicine, you should do this, like architecture. But I decided I want to do classical music. So I told my dad, because he had studied in a boarding school in Ramsgate. Right. And so I said, I really want to do classical music. I really want to do music. So I moved back to England, and then where I was in Kent, in Ramsgate for 2 years. I did my A-levels. Then I went to London and I did a kind of like a joint degree where I was in Guildhall and in City University. So I stayed in London for 4 years and then moved to Vienna. And then I went, yes, to continue my studies in flute. But I only stayed there for about a year and a half. And now I went to France, which is where I am now. And I was in Lyon, and now I live in Paris.
And how many languages do you speak?
Well, fluently, I speak three, but I can kind of speak five because I speak some Spanish and German. I don't consider my German fluent at all. So fluent is just French, Portuguese and English, and then German and Spanish.
So you came to London and you studied under the wonderful Roland Sutherland, didn't you, at Guildhall?
Yeah.
Now, Roland is not necessarily known for his classical music, is he?
No, he's not.
And was that the linchpin that moved you away from completely focusing on classical and experimenting with freedom? Did Roland sort of open that up, or was that unlocked earlier in your musical development?
I think that was unlocked earlier. I mean, Roland helped me immensely with many other things which I really needed as a musician, but I think I was a bit I wouldn't say that it was that I wasn't a good student, but I was kind of rebellious in some ways. Like some things I didn't see the point or got me annoyed to practice. Like I would really be interested in contemporary music quite early, and I found it more interesting because it was music of people who are still alive. And we, you know, in conservatories, we learn Bach and we learn Mozart. And when I was studying for my entry auditions in Austria, I'd go to these different teachers in different conservatories, and they would all have their vision of how Bach should be played. And I started finding that frustrating. So, because I was thinking, how can we even understand how Bach would want his music to be performed? So I started questioning a lot of things. And in the end, and this took me several years, actually, I realized that maybe the conservatoire path probably wasn't the best for me. Like, I mean, I learned a lot and I'm glad I took it, but I was resistant to many things. So I think it came mostly just from my personality.
It's very interesting what you say about Bach and Mozart, in that I've spoken to lots of people that are completely fed up with so many people, so many professors around the world telling them how to play Bach and Mozart, and each one saying something different. There isn't a uniformity. So yeah, it is, how do you find that path that is what Bach or what Mozart had actually wanted at that time? And I think it's, to a lot of people, it's very confusing. It was certainly to me when I was growing up, being told to play it this way, and then to go on a summer school, and then to be told, no, actually, no, you play it this way.
Yes. Oh, yeah, sure, of course. I mean, I had this Bach sonata that I would play, and the paper was almost getting ripped because each teacher would, like, erase something from what the other teacher had done, and they would write something else, you know? And, yeah, I found that really frustrating because I'm thinking, I'm spending so much time trying to understand Bach or Mozart, and I'm thinking, how can I expect to understand someone who's been dead for centuries when there are people who I never even knew, when there are people like, I don't know, my best friends or my mother that I've known them my whole life and I still don't understand them sometimes, you know, we still don't understand each other. So it's how can I started to get quite annoyed, and I wanted to learn, but then, you know, the way you perform Mozart in Austria, especially since he's Austrian, you know, it's very different than how you'd play it in a London school or in a French school. And
was that a sort of a leaner over to that sort of push you over to the contemporary side more because of your frustrations? We all have frustrations when we're learning Bach and Mozart because it's actually so hard, even though the notes are simple. It's actually the space within the notes and how you play them is so hard. So you moved over onto the contemporary side, didn't you?
I moved them more, yeah, especially because I wanted to collaborate with composers and I wanted to, you know, talk to them and understand more of their music. And it's more of an exchange because, you know, they're still alive and you can ask questions and you can be sure more of how something, not that it should sound or how it's, you know, how he desired or she desired for it to sound. So that did seem more appealing for me, especially because when it comes to extended techniques too, I found it very interesting. I found it very different, and that you could explore so much with it. But I mean, I still play Mozart and Bach. I don't hate it or anything. I was just frustrated with more frustrated with myself as to how I should approach it.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's Bach and Mozart are the staples of the music world, aren't they? And whether you get frustrated at how you perform it or other people's critiques of you is one thing, but to sit back and enjoy it is another.
Yeah.
even though you're a wonderful C flute player, a lot of people now know you as a bass flute player.
Yeah.
When did that transition over? Or what made you jump from the C flute, miss out the alto flute, and actually go on to a big fat thing at the bottom?
Well, what changed that? I think it was also because I have this interest for contemporary music. Mm-hmm. And it's a new instrument if you compare it to how old the flute is.
Yes.
So I always loved the sound. I think the first time I played it was when I was, I can't remember which, but at a flute convention, I think maybe in Germany. And I tried it and I thought, oh, that sounds beautiful. And I also thought the alto flute sounded beautiful, but the alto flute only went down to a G. And I thought the bass flute has this I found like a deeper, it can go down to a low C, it's a whole octave. And I just found that instrument really beautiful. And then at one point, I wanted to perform Ian Clarke's Within.
Yep.
And we needed a bass flute. And I was obsessed with performing. This was in Vienna. And I put together a little ensemble and I was saying, oh, we have to perform this because it's gorgeous. And I managed to convince some of my flute player friends. I like forced them to listen to the music. But we didn't have a bass flute. So and we couldn't find one. Like,
Well,
and then
yeah,
the,
they're rare breed nowadays, aren't
yeah,
they?
and they were even rarer then. Well, this was just, I think, 5, 4 years ago. But anyway, we in Vienna was, we couldn't find one that someone would lend. And so I went on eBay. This was a very bad, I mean, this is a quite a bad idea, but I was just, I don't know, sometimes when I really want to do something, I will find a way, even if it's like not the wisest. So there was this Chinese, I found a Chinese bass flutes on eBay, and I don't even think it's made out of metal, you know, it's like weird. You can like bend it if you press too hard, you know.
Yep.
And so I bought this flute on eBay, and I was like, are you insane? But it cost, I don't know, maybe a bit less than 200 euros.
Good grief.
So it's like nothing. And when it arrived, I was so ecstatic. I was so happy, and I would play it all the time. But I ended up almost breaking it. Like it fell, and the keys were all bent and everything. But we used that flute for two performances, and I still have it, even though it's much more of a, it's not really an instrument, you know, it's much more of a toy than anything else. But I haven't had the courage to throw it away. So I've always had that. And then when I wanted to make more videos with the bass flutes, because I still loved it, and there was an arrangement I had made, but when I would play it on my, well, toy bass flutes, it would be extremely out of tune, every note, you know, it would be very difficult. So that's when I contacted you and I asked, can I borrow a bass flute to make some videos?
Ah, that was why.
Yes.
Daniela, you became known on bass flute with bass flute on Instagram, and then you just started this little project, didn't you? This bass
Yeah.
flute project that itself took off and became a publication.
Yes, exactly. It was so when I had a real and gorgeous bass flute, I decided it would be great for me to be able to collaborate with composers more, as I love doing, and have new repertoire for the bass flute because there wasn't that many, you know. So then I decided to just, and it was my first video where I was just talking on Instagram. I put a story up saying that I wanted to do a project and that if anyone wants to write pieces for the bass flute and send it to me, I'd play it and record it, and I'd put it up on Instagram, and I'd give credit to the composer. And since I had already quite a good following on Instagram, I got a good response, and people were interested, and they'd send me pieces which were less than a minute long, sometimes a bit more, but I'd always put down the composer's website, and I'd get in touch with them, and it worked really well. So it caught the attention of Ben from Master Music Publications, and he said, why don't we, oh yeah, because I collaborated as well with a harpist, and so he'd seen that. I said, why don't we publish some of your pieces for the bass flute? Would you be interested in that? And so of course I was like, yes, of course. But I had never even thought of that. In the beginning, it was really just something for fun, like which I enjoyed and which we could both gain something from it, both me and the composers. So,
And they're all really playable, and that's the great thing
yeah.
about these pieces. They're not plinky plonky contemporary bass flute pieces. They are beautifully and sorry, beautifully? They are beautiful, and
Yeah.
they are manageable by any player on a bass flute.
Yes, it's true. And there are even some with extended techniques. I tried to, when I was picking the composers, I tried to vary as much as possible.
So where do people find this publication, Daniela?
Well, they can find it on the website of Mass Music Publications. They can also find it on in the best flute store in London, All Flutes Plus, where they you can purchase it there too. If you don't want to purchase it online, you can also download a digital version for those who prefer playing on an iPad on the same website of MasterMusicPublications.com.
Do you play on an iPad or do you still prefer the physical music, Daniela?
Since I've moved around a lot, I have less and less stuff each time I change flats or countries. So I find it very useful to play on an iPad just because everything is there. And also I can write and erase on it. What I prefer, I'm not sure. I like both. I mean, there's still something special about playing on paper, and I guess it's better for your eyes too. But it's very practical. Like this time when I went to London, I just took my iPad because I've got so much music on there, and it's just I'm sure I won't forget anything.
What's your favorite app, your favorite sheet music app?
Actually, for now, I was using, oh, I forgot what it's called. I think it's Music, or but that but for now, I was just using the app that comes already on the iPad, the Apple Books.
Okay. And you download your music from there. Well, you are, say, a very eclectic flute player. We can't actually pigeonhole you because when you think, ah, Daniela, the bass flute player, you come out with a video showing you whizzing around and playing beautifully on the concert flute. And I think you're just missing the alto in your repertoire now.
Oh yes, that's true. Because it's gorgeous as well. It's a gorgeous instrument. Whenever I tried the alto, I was like, oh, it's so beautiful. It's just such a special tone.
Yes, but you actually make the bass flute when you go into the alto flute region. Your bass flute playing sounds like an alto flute. So, do you really need one? Who knows? Daniela, what advice would you have for musicians worried about sort of making their way in the business?
Well, something that I kind of almost wish someone would have told me, apart just, well, the main thing is definitely don't worry too much, you know? I mean, it's hard, of course, but it will work out if you're really true to what you want to do. And if you're doing something that you want to do with passion, you will find a way. But also to definitely think outside the box, because I think in when I was in the conservatoires and on music schools, it's almost as if we're geared only towards an orchestral position, or a teaching position, and those are the two options that we're mainly focused on. And it's sometimes it's not even what we want, and we only discover that much later, after we're more mature and after we've seen what it's like playing in an orchestra, or how it really is, because it's such an idealized world. And I adore playing in orchestras. I'm not sure it's something that I would want just for my career. It's the only thing I would want for my career as a musician. Just really think outside the box. There are many other options. There are many other things you can do as a musician, which are extremely enriching and really have changed my life, for example.
And how do you, what would you say if somebody was to say, well, I'm too scared to do that. I'm too scared to sort of experiment. I'm too scared to go outside the box. How do they break down those barriers? Because you have.
I mean, I sympathize very much with someone who is scared, because I was very much scared in the beginning, like even to post a Zoom tube video. But what happened was, I took so long to, there were many things which I took so long to do. They were ready, but I wouldn't post them because I was scared. Because and then, of course, I think the best thing to say is just do it, because in the end, you will feel much better. And or else you won't be being honest with yourself, and you'll be just living a life for other people, like you'll be living a life of doing what other people expect of you, and not being true to yourself, you know. So, yeah, just after a while, I just got tired of my own. I got tired of waiting, and I was frustrated, and I just, like, there wasn't one thing which just said, okay, this is going to make me, this has inspired me to do it. No, I just, I took time, but I wish I would have started being, posting my stuff earlier, but you just have to do it, yeah.
When we had up, when we enjoyed our afternoon tea last week, we were talking about music and performances, and you showed me a picture which encapsulated you and the joy of music to the T, and that, you know, it's not, it wasn't standing on a stage playing the Ebert Flute Concerto to 3,000 people in front of the Berlin Philharmonic, was it? What was it, Daniela? What was it?
It was me with some gorgeous children, which I teach in Paris every Thursday, and they're just, every Thursday I leave that school like full of positive energy, and I've got a huge smile because they are so fascinated, and they don't have the what can happen many times in music schools, where you're just so worried and you almost forget why you've started playing the instruments. You know, you're focused on scales, or you're focused on the auditions, you're focused on exams. It's just, they were just pure, they had just this pure joy of learning and discovering music, and everything I would show them, it'd be like, wow, that's amazing. And it really, yeah, that's a huge passion of mine, to teach these children. It's really, it's therapeutic to me. You know, it's almost as if they are teaching me or making me relearn the joys of music. It's been really lovely.
And the thing that came over to me is, how many musicians do you know that smile a lot? It's very few. They always seem to have the world on their shoulders, yet these young children had smiles and joy. And that's the power of music, isn't it? That's the power of flute playing. We, as you say, we forget that.
Yes, we do. And we have to, I mean, I think it's getting better. And I think that's also the good thing about Instagram, is that you're able to share so much. And it's just a great way of communicating. But when I was with these children, when I start teaching someone the flute who's never played the flute before, you know, that they're just so fascinated by this instrument, and they say, oh, it's so beautiful. And when they learn a new note, it's another pure joy. It's like, oh, I learned an F sharp today. And I'm just staring at them and thinking, wow, this really is, it really is beautiful. And it's the way that we all started. And it's why we chose to do music. It's because of our love for the instrument. It's not about getting ahead of someone. It's just about, you know, sharing and this gorgeous job that we have.
And we tend to lose that awe-inspiring love for the sound and what we can actually do, because we become conditioned to, as you say, scales, studies, am I playing this right, have I done have I done everything right for the masterclass? And we lose the wonder in what it is that we're all doing. And that's what you bring out in your flute playing and your Instagrams, and just your general refusal to toe the line of the classical flute player.
Yes, I hope so. I hope that's what I can bring out. There's another flutist called, I'm sure you know him, Wissam Bustani.
Oh, the fabulous Wissam, yes.
And I remember I was in Croatia for a master, in one of his master classes, and he was talking about love, you know?
The power of love, yes.
That was so inspiring for me, because I remember I was so nervous going to this masterclass. I was, you know, I was comparing myself to absolutely everyone and always considering myself the worst player. And when he was talking about the power of love and music, it just brought me back. And I was thinking, like, you know, this is why we learn music. And everyone was so inspired. And it just became such a great atmosphere in the masterclass. So he also inspired me to that, to just be more true to myself. And even if people don't like my music, or because that happens to no matter what player, you know, there are things which we will like, there are things which we won't like. You know, it doesn't matter, and it's not. It's just our own expression. So, I mean, we're all human, you know. We're not a robot playing an instrument. And sometimes someone who makes no mistakes in a concerto or something can be much more anti-musical than someone who makes, I don't know, a mistake or two or something.
Yeah, as Wissam would say, every single performance by every single player is completely unique. And you may play each note technically correct, but there may be no love in there. Yet you may have a new flute player that is playing something purely by heart because they love it and the joy will come across. And for him, that is more important than someone that is technically correct, because love is why we do music, isn't it?
It is. It definitely is. I mean, we haven't chosen to do music to get rich, I don't think.
I'm sure there are some rich musicians out there, but I've yet to meet them. I've yet to meet them. Oh, Daniela, thank you for joining me from Paris. Thank you this morning.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for the, you know, I do apologize for not recording our afternoon tea last week, because that would have been fun.
That would have been fun, but it would have been 3 hours and a half long. So.
And the thing is, everybody, with Daniela, is she's always smiling. And that probably is from the fact that Daniela is very comfortable in who she is as an artist, who she is as a player. And while she's still sort of searching and still exploring, the thing is, you are you, aren't you? And you're very comfortable with you, and you know you.
I am now. I definitely am now. I'm much more comfortable, yes.
And you're very open in telling people to, you know, go on that search, find out who they are. You're not a robot. You are you. And sometimes we don't know who we are musically, do we?
No, because we can be, as you said, sometimes conditioned to also thinking that we want something specific, and then only later we discover. But that's what I also tell all my followers when they send me messages, and I try to be as helpful as I can, because I've been through that, and I didn't really look at anyone for guidance. I just, because I didn't really know who to turn to. But yeah, now I try to do that in my best way possible.
So Daniela, how do people find you on social media? Of course I know, but I'd like you to tell them.
Well, on Instagram, my Instagram handle is just Daniela Morris Flute. Then on Facebook, I think it's the same, Daniela Morris Flute. So that's Daniela, one L, and Mars, like planets.
Yes.
And Flute. Yeah, that's how you can find it.
Wonderful. Well, thank you once again, my lady, for getting up early on a quite a cold and wet Parisian morning, I gather, because it's wet here. Is it wet over there?
It's very windy. I think the wind has caught up here because it's very windy too, but it's not too cold. And it's not that early. It's 11:42 now. Because I'm an hour ahead of you.
Yeah, normally you push the weather up in the summer. It's the weather comes up from the south, but for some peculiar reason, everything's coming from north, isn't it?
That's true.
Because you obviously know, being an honorary English lady, you know about our obsession with the weather.
I do.
Daniela Mars, thank you very much for being my podcast interviewee today.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure.
And let's catch up again soon.
Yes, you will.
Take care, my friend.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, that brings us to the end of the Talking Flutes Extra podcast for this week. Oh, what a shame. So whether you're a flutist, a flautist, a fluter, a fluterer, or whatever you decide to call yourself, may you have a wonderful week ahead. Goodbye. Talking Flutes and Talking Flutes Extra are podcast productions by the Trevor James Flute Company. For more information, visit trevorjamesflutes.com.